Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're now 8 minutes and 40 seconds into the second hour, second segment of this hour. I'm Alex Jones, your host. The websites are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. If you go to Infowars.com, you can link through to our next guest website, the World Transhumanist Association for the Ethical Use of Technology to Extend Human Capabilities, Capacities. And we have Dr. James J. Hughes, and he's the Executive Director of the World Transhumanist Association, and he is a Ph.D. He's the author of Citizen Cyborg, Why Democratic Societies Must Respond to the Redesigned Human of the Future. Dr. Hughes teaches health policy at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, and serves as Trinity's Associate Director of International or Institutional Research and Planning. Dr. Hughes also serves as Executive Director of the World Transhumanist Association as its affiliated Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. Dr. Hughes produces the weekly syndicated public affairs talk show, and he also, again, is just involved. Basically, I would call him kind of a futurist, and we're now joined by him. Dr. Hughes, good to have you on with us.
Hi, Alex.
I've got a bunch of different reports here. Here's one out of the Village Voice. Cyborg Liberation Front inside the Movement for Post-Human Rights. Sounds like you know, something like a legal entity out of a Larry Niven book or something.
Well, that article is a report on a conference that we held at Yale University last summer, and or the summer before last. And we focused that conference on trying to get a dialogue going between the transhumanist movement and bioethics. Bioethicists in general, we believe, have some implicit sympathies with our point of view, but weren't aware of it until we held that conference.
And what is your point of view? What does your organization that you head do?
Well, we have a couple different facets. One is that we're a civil rights movement for people who believe that they should be able to control their own bodies, their own brains, their own reproductive capacities, and use emerging technologies to go beyond what some people consider yucky or the natural limits of the human condition. So, for instance, we are adamant supporters of life extension technology. We think that people have a right to use that, even if other people think that you shouldn't live past 120 or that's unnatural for you to do that. We're advocates of people's right to take drugs, for instance, cognitive enhancement drugs that make them smarter or genetic engineering that makes them smarter. We are advocates of people's right to control their own bodies for aesthetic purposes. The simple body modifications that we see around us today and the things that will come in the future. And we believe in people's right to reproductive freedom. We think that you shouldn't be told what kinds of children to have, when, and how to have them.
Well, the problem with some of your statements is that there are inherent dangers in genetic engineering, what type of viruses or bacteria they can give rise to, what changing the basic code of the DNA can do. I mean, I've had a lot of different top scientists on about this subject. Even people that support almost unbridled research admit that there are great dangers. Are you saying there shouldn't be restrictions on any of it?
Well, we're principally concerned with biotechnologies that affect the human body, and so we're not. We do have opinions, personal opinions.
You start talking about what type of children people want to have. I mean, the British government's already talking about pre-screening embryos, quote, to see if they're violent or propensity to be evil, thought criminals. I mean, whatever you guys are going to push, the state's going to jump on later.
Well, that's one point of view, and the notion that we can somehow prevent the state from eventually getting involved in biotechnology in order by forbidding individuals from using biotechnology, I think, is a wrong-headed approach.
What they're going to do is they're going to keep it all for themselves and use the movements that are against it to monopolize it for the elite. I mean, look, I know the elite's obsessed with life extension technology. They want to hold on to it forever. They don't want to die. In fact, who does? But the point is that I don't see the elite ever letting 6.5 billion people, and by the time this stuff's viable, 8-9 billion people have access to this. In fact, they've even said that.
Well, I think you may be right. I think there is a strong propensity on the part of certain elites, and we certainly see that in the Bush administration, to raise a bunch of bogus fears about the ways that individuals, free individuals and free societies might use these technologies. And some of it is, for instance, that they don't want overpopulation to run rampant, as if saving human lives today with medical technology and allowing people today to use birth control isn't already driving population growth around the world. I mean, there is clearly a genocidal or population control mentality on the part of some of the opponents of life extension technology.
But when you read a article like Why the Future Doesn't Need Us by Bill Joy, or you read Age of Spiritual Machines, and I'm sure you've read all that.
Sure.
The elite, and I mean, I've been around pretty high-level academics and people, and all they talk about is, the people bomb. We've got to restrict them. We need access to this, but not them. And I see it all being walled off behind a wall of national security, kind of these technological Mount Olympuses being built, and then the general public basically being shut out of the entire process, with the elite then using these technologies to actually, to use a Frank Herbert term, kind of engineer and suboid the general population. Comments?
I think there is a possibility that things could go in that direction. I think that's, again, why we call ourselves a human rights movement. But in the first place, we believe in the legitimacy of institutions like the Food and Drug Administration, because we do think that these new technologies should be tested for their safety. But then we also believe that there should be as wide access to these as possible. And we don't think that bans on any of these technologies will stop despotic governments, either our own or other despotic governments, from using these technologies for police purposes, for surveillance purposes, for military purposes. And so the best way to maintain freedom and liberty around the world is for people to have as widespread and as individual access to these technologies as possible.
The problem is there's going to be terrorist attacks using these high-tech systems. Of course, it'll be the global crime syndicate engaging in the attacks to then, restrict and control. Comments?
Well, I don't know why that's necessarily a problem. From our point of view, it is a problem. I mean, there's always going to be crime, and criminals are always going to use new technologies. But we saw that the 9/11 terrorists only had to use box cutters. So I think that the modern world is a dangerous and fragile place. And one of the best things that we can do as citizens is keep our bodies and our communities strong. And using these technologies, we can do that. You know, for instance, we can either rely on the government to go out there and identify certain kinds of new bioterrorist weapons that might come online, or we can all keep our immune systems as strong as possible and thereby, as a body public, in other words, be prepared for some of these bioterrorism attacks better than if we rely on the government.
Yeah, earlier I was doing the rare thing of trying to eat a hamburger in between you talking, and I was about to choke there, but I'm back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to Dr. James J. Hughes, and he's the executive director of the World Transhumanist Association, and their website is transhumanism.org. We have a link to it on Infowars.com. Doctor, you know, you say men with box cutters carrying out terror attacks. That's a whole other subject for debate, but that's basically an impossibility when you actually look at the evidence. But I'm not going to debate you on that subject. I see puppets like Bush using good Christian conservatives, who I count myself among them, saying, oh, we've got to block and control all of this, to go back to my previous point, so then the elite can basically ban everything except for themselves. Can you comment more on that?
Well, I think that there is a point to that. One of the things that we're very concerned about is that if these technologies are forbidden, it won't mean that they won't be available, that just the people will just have to pay to go to someplace like Singapore or Beijing in order to get these genetic engineerings or these nanotechnologies, whatever.
But that's why they want global governments, so they can have global laws.
Well, we probably differ on that. I do think there should be global regulation of some of these technologies, but I think it should be regulation that respects people's individual liberty.
Well, look at the UN. They give awards to China for being the model nation, and they have hardly any freedoms. So,
right.
I mean,
Well, I understand your point about that, and I'm also concerned that some of the regulations that are being proposed at the UN could be drastically conservative. So, for instance, there's right now a disability rights convention that's being debated, and some of the radical disability rights folks who are crafting that proposed legislation are arguing that there should be an international ban on women's right to reproductive freedom over fetuses that might, if they want to terminate pregnancies where they have a disabled fetus or a handicapped fetus. And I think that most people would find that an extremely troubling restriction on women's liberty if...
there you go. You're talking about human engineering by law being authorized. And then, see, your argument is, well, it's a deformed baby. But, see, then it's going to be the government, and I'm against abortion, by the way, then it's going to be the government coming out and saying, oh, you show aggressive tendencies, we're going to have to terminate this embryo, and you're going to have to come back in for testing on your next one.
What I'm talking about is that women have a right to know the contents of their own bodies and to make decisions about whether to continue pregnancies. And I think that's one of the most traumatic reasons why a woman would want to terminate a pregnancy is if she found out it was severely handicapped in some way, and I think women have a right to make that decision. So we'll just have to agree to disagree a bit about that.
Well, I want to talk more about your organization. I want to get your futurist view of what life will be like in 20 years.
Sure.
You know, we're told that all these new technologies are, well, just like the buggy whip makers getting angry at automobiles as they became popular in the first 20 years of the last century. And that, oh, it's just the next phase of human evolution, this merger with machine. And I've got Pentagon documents from 2000 where they say everyone's going to have a brain chip and there's going to be hive minds, all of us connected. But all these precursors to this technology that are being put into track and trace and control, that's how all this is being implemented. And Dr. Hughes, I mean, how do you respond to that? The government out of the gates is engaging in really bad applications of some of the building blocks of the future you're talking about.
Well, I am concerned about some of the Defense Department research and applications. I think the main thing that's problematic about that is that so much is being done without the transparency of public disclosure. We know from the Gulf War syndrome and from other health problems of U.S. soldiers who return from the field that research is being done on their bodies that they're not being fully informed about and that they're having long-term health consequences.
And then it comes out that they were doing experimental programs on them, which is totally illegal. I mean, even if you're in the military, you have the right to not be experimented on, and they don't care.
No, I completely agree, and I think that the U.S. military needs to be held to a higher standard about that kind of medical research and that we need to know what's going on because there is a problem about an asymmetry between a public that doesn't have access to these technologies and a military and police state that does.
Well, the military is a perfect testing zone because you give the troops stuff that makes them sick, then they come back to your VA for treatment, and you get to track what's really happening to them. And then they're not rodents, folks, and they're not guinea pigs. But I wanted to get into the future that you see developing because you're one of the world renowned experts on this subject. What type of world do you think we'll live in 20 years?
Well, one of the things that makes this kind of prediction extremely difficult is the rapid acceleration in all of the technological trends and scientific developments that are leading in the direction of human enhancement. For instance, nanotechnology is happening much more rapidly than most of the people in the field expected it would. And now we do have the prospect within about 20 or 30 years of having nanorobotic systems that could do quite dramatic things inside our bodies. Similarly, the sequencing of the human genome happened much more rapidly than had earlier been predicted, and now within 10 years we're going to have on-the-spot full genome diagnosis available in every doctor's office, maybe as a security system on your door. We're also going to have on-the-spot chromosome genetic engineering machines that can read out new chromosomes for various kinds of tailored purposes. That's going to happen in about 10 or 15 years. So you start to converge all of these technologies, things that are happening at the molecular level, things that are happening in information science, the Moore's Law, the rapid increase in computing power, our understanding of the functioning of the brain, our understanding of pharmacology, all of these things are coming together, and we're going to have some pretty dramatic benefits.
So a fusion of the third and fourth wave with this exponential growth curve, it's almost unlimited.
If you take the positive, projection of what could happen, I think we could have quite dramatic increases in our life expectancy. We could see an almost elimination of mental illness. We could see an elimination of mental retardation. We could see.
There you go. Who says what is mentally ill? Well, the new Freedom Initiative that Bush just passed, their own documents say they plan to put half the kids on drugs. Look, half our children aren't mentally ill. And these drugs are horrible. I mean, all their own internal documents show that. So, see, I don't want the crazy people telling me who's crazy.
Well, I assume as a conservative that you're in favor of allowing parents to make those decisions with their doctors. So,
but it's not. But under New Freedom, have you heard about New Freedom?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is a strong concern about when governments and schools collide with parents about what should be done about the medical treatment of children. But it's really a different issue than what I'm concerned about, because what I'm principally concerned about is that all adults should have access to whatever medicines they think help them live better lives. And so I am concerned about pediatric medication. My kids are on Concerta, which is a version of Ritalin. I was on Ritalin as a kid. I found it helped a lot with being able to get through school in ways that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to do. So I think a lot of parents will find that Ritalin helps their kids, but I think it should be a family decision.
So you think the drug company's writing up the guidelines and saying half the kids need to be on this stuff?
Well, what the American...
And how do humans survive without Ritalin freeze?
The American Academy of Pediatrics thinks that about 5 to 10% of kids could benefit from stimulant medications for attention deficit disorder, and only about 4 to 5% of American kids are on stimulant medication.
Actually, well, yeah, but total with the serotonin reuptake inhibitors and then the amphetamine class drugs, you got 15% on drugs, sir. Tell you what, I'll stay there. Long segment coming up, plenty of time to talk. I want to get more into what the future's going to look like.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
With gardening season coming up, you'll soon be building your compost pile. And that's why there's a great gardening tool I have to tell you about. It's called the Compost Twin. Gardeners know the importance of composting, but we're all too familiar with the back-breaking work of turning the compost pile with a pitchfork and the messy accumulation of kitchen scraps while you wait for a batch of compost to cook. So Mantis developed the Compost Twin. The Compost Twin is the only composter with two 10-bushel bins on one machine. The barrels sit well off the ground and away from the pests that feast on your compost pile for Sunday dinner. Plus, mixing the compost is a breeze with the Compost Twin's easy turn gear system. And with a second chamber, you can continually add kitchen scraps and garden waste without disturbing the composting process in the first chamber. No more mess, no more odors, no more hard work. Deal direct with Mantis and get a no-hassle one-year money-back guarantee. Call Mantis now for a free video and information kit on the Compost Twin. Call toll-free 1-866-833-MANTIS. That's 1-866-833-MANTIS.
Now you can enjoy the most delicious, freshest, and healthiest drinking water anytime, even while traveling, during outdoor sporting activities, and in hospital filtration environments such as local or national emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Light removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals your body needs. The Berkey Light is so powerful it can purify raw, untreated water from remote lake streams and stagnant ponds. The Berkey Light is transparent and glows in the dark with its rechargeable LED lighting system, so it can be used as a night light or camp light. Get the Berkey Light for only $259 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Many people have wondered what has happened to the once great United States of America, why the moral decay that has been taking place within it. The United States has been targeted for overthrow for world government. The United Nations has been established to redistribute the wealth of the world away from the United States, Great Britain, and Western Europe. You need to know, as a specific individual citizen of the United States of America, why these things are happening and what you can do about it. We'd like to offer you a one-year absolutely free subscription to Newswatch magazine. Just call 1-800-516-8736. That's 1-800-516-8736. 516-8736. Just call today. Our operators are standing by to take your subscription. It's absolutely free.
The discussions we have during the breaks are better than what happens on air, but I was just talking to Dr. James Hughes, who's a sociologist by training and a professor and author and a lecturer, and he's the head honcho, executive director of the World Transhumanist Association. During the break, Doc, you were telling me how you're a big fan of drugs and kind of taking control of the human evolutionary process, and we were talking about the New Freedom Initiative and this universal screening. Please repeat what you were saying during the break, sir.
Well, I think that in the future, one of the things that we're going to have is increasing numbers of technologies that allow us to control our own brain chemistry. And the critical issue, and the place where you and I, I'm sure, agree, is that people should be able to make those decisions for themselves and not be told by others, by governments, insofar as possible, what to do with their own brains and what to do with their own brain chemistry. So in the cases of, for instance, depression, I'm sure you agree that some people benefit from these depressive drugs, and the question is whether individuals get to make those decisions or whether they're under some kind of coercion. I certainly don't want to see any kind of coercion. But I'm not sure that I agree that a universal government public health screening program for mental illness is necessarily coercive, but it could be coercive.
It is. I mean, I've seen hundreds of reports where they force children on these drugs. There was a WOAI TV report a few months ago where the average Texas foster child, over two-thirds are on drugs, and the average is four drugs, some as many as 17 drugs. And I know for a fact Ritalin causes brain shrinkage, heart enlargement. I mean, these are the medical studies done by the institutions, and you're saying you're a big fan of it.
Well, Ritalin's been in use for 50 years. Originally it was
Look at our society.
Well, originally it was called minimal brain dysfunction that was being treated for, and then it was called hyperactivity, and I was, as I said, I was on Ritalin 40 years ago. So there's like a whole lot of evidence about what Ritalin can and can't do and what harmful effects it can have. And you're right that the abuse of stimulants by people who are not prescribed them in the doses that are used in pediatric treatment can have harmful effects, and that's something we have to keep an eye on.
Well, Doctor, you're a big supporter of drugs, as you said, to take control of the human mind if it's individually a decision. But what drugs are you on?
Oh, well, I have acid reflux, so I take that. I mean, what drugs, psychoactive drugs am I on?
Yes.
I drink my red wine in the evening. That's my big health my big health effect there.
Yeah, that's why they lived at 115 over in Italy, huh?
Right.
Yeah, certainly there have been some studies on that. I believe you there. But, okay, I want to get into, because I hear these futurists on the radio, I read their reports, I've read what you've said. I mean, I've heard you guys say, well, the body modification movement, you know, that's paving the way to the acceptance of these cyborg, this new life form. People are already declaring themselves, that professor in England, a new life form. We know the military's doing a lot of secret projects, and I've talked to people who are involved in them, only described as nightmarish. But how soon do you think we see a real, as you call it, new species?
Well, it depends on what you mean by species. I mean, the classical definition of a species is an animal that can't breed with another animal, and I think that we're going to soon be able to have people who ordinarily wouldn't be able to have natural offspring will be able to have offspring through the intercession of technology. So, for instance, I think that we'll be able to have same-sex children who are the products of both a man and a man or a woman and a woman through recombinant nuclear technology. So I don't think that actually the traditional understanding of what a species is will be relevant very much longer. But there are some suggestions that people might translate out of carbon-based life form altogether and become computer-based minds, and that would certainly constitute a species change.
You know, even as the computers get more and more advanced, I don't think that they're going to become truly what you call self-aware for a long, long time. I think that we're going to see the government and others merging, brain tissue grown from fetuses in with the machines and calling it a machine.
I think you're probably right, actually. I think that the challenge of generating a self-aware, self-willed personality inside a machine are much greater than any of the AI enthusiasts think. But that what we are going to have is an increasingly intimate marriage of computer technology with neural technology. And you saw this just last year. The FDA approved for people who have severe paralysis a chip that can be inserted into their brain that can communicate directly from their brain into computers.
Yeah, the nerve stimulator.
Right. Well, not just the stimulator. There's stimulation going towards the brain, but there's also a chip now that allows the brain to control a cursor in a computer. And of course, this is a tremendous boon for people who have severe paralysis because otherwise they would be trapped inside a body and not be able to communicate for as long as 15, 20 years.
What about 20, 30 years from now, where, say, 20% of the public, mainly young people, this will be packaged as some rebellious, trendy thing to do. Your parents don't want you to get it, but they pass a global law that you're allowed to go in and, you know, be fitted with the new brain chip to interact, and the military says you've got to have this to have, you know, to work with us, and then pretty soon you've got two different classes of people, and then those Christians, they refuse to go along with it, and they're living in ghettos because, you know, they're refusing, and we're having to pay for them, and, you know, they're just backwards, and let's just get rid of them.
Well, I don't see us getting rid of the Amish. The Amish have rejected all kinds of technologies and are actually quite genetically different from the people around them because of interbreeding, but yet they're not being subject to any kind of genocide. But I do think that there is...
Actually, they're getting put under the squeeze right now by social services and...
Well, there's some legitimate questions about how far the rest of us need to bend over backward, and that is where your question comes in. So, for instance... do people have a right not to be required to know how to read when they go for a job? I think it's perfectly acceptable for employers to expect that their employees, their prospective employees,
yeah. So in the future, you got to have the chip. Yeah.
The
rest of us shouldn't have to bend over backwards for you. So you just say it's an individual decision.
Well,
then you extrapolate out right into it's going to be reasonable. We're going to have the chip.
Well, you're saying that employers should be forbidden to expect that people have certain
but because
kinds
of the
skills.
But because of the trump card
that
these technologies give people and the corporations' consolidation,
I don't think you want the government passing a law that says that employers are not allowed to ask that people know how to read when they come for a job.
Yeah, but you just talked about chips.
Right. Well, I'm saying that in the future, if certain kinds of technologies become widely available and dramatically increase the performance of potential workers, then people may feel a little bit of coercion to go and get that. Just as, 50 years ago, or maybe 500 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to see very well without my glasses. And today, if I tried to go for a job and didn't have glasses, I wouldn't be able to do very much.
The analogy of putting glasses on your nose and taking a brain chip is light years apart.
Well, how about wearing your prosthetic limb in the workplace? Already we have a debate about what exactly constitutes a disability under the
I have no problem with, intelligent artificial limbs. That's different than saying you've got to put something into your brain.
It isn't different because already we have people with disabilities who go into the workplace and say, under the Americans with Disability Act, you're not allowed to fire me because although I could put that prosthetic limb on, I want you to give me a wheelchair.
Sir, what I'm talking about is this technocrat elite, which you obviously are part of, and this future...
I wish I could get paid by the technocrat elite.
Well, let me just finish this. What's going to happen, this is going to happen because it always happens, this is the way our society works. What's going to happen is they're going to build the infrastructure... the rapidly expanding infrastructure that's going to overlay the current infrastructure in the fourth wave, they're going to put the infrastructure in where it's designed for the wireheads, the cyberpunks, and we're all going to be second-class citizens, and we're going to have our children taken from us because we're backwards kooks who don't want the chips, and it's going to be a hellhole, and it's going to have control designed into it because that's what the states always wanted, and you're for the state ordering psychological testing when they're going to write the guidelines. And it's out of control. This elite is evil, sir. This elite is out of. It's got so many evil things. You just mentioned what they do to the troops. They're going to control this.
Well, I think there's always going to be a question about what constitutes child abuse. And right now, our society leans over backwards to respect the rights of parents who have kooky religious beliefs who want to beat
their
kids. and those kinds of things, I think there is a legitimate question about whether parents who don't teach their kids to read are committing child abuse or not. And in the future, not giving your kids certain kinds of medicines and enhancements may be considered child abuse.
Just like in THX-1138, he's bad. He's caught taking injectors off the little children, and so they need to chase him down.
Well, that's a that's clearly not the future any of us want to live in.
Look at real life, sir. It's pretty darn dystopic.
Well, I think that, again...
Except for the coddled 4% living here in America and the total 10% living in European nations.
Where you and I probably are on the same page is that we want as much individual choice over these things as possible. We don't want to see a coercive...
But you just said that it will be basically abusive to not give your child the ZM12 brain chip.
What I'm saying is that for all of your listeners, I'm sure that there is some point at which they consider child abuse committed by some parent towards their kid to be so severe that that kid needs to be taken away from that parent.
Because they won't give them the medications they need.
Well, if the medication is life-saving, I think most of your listeners probably would agree that the state has a right to intervene and say, look, you have to save your kid's life. And
what do your colleagues think of your ideas and your work at the college?
Most of them don't seem to have a problem with it. I'm always itching for a good argument, but I haven't found one here. I used to get more arguments in graduate school at the University of Chicago, where folks were a little bit more conservative.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, Professor Dr. Hughes. I'm sitting here, and you keep talking. You keep putting out the statement that nothing should be coercive, and it's kind of like Waco when they're ramming the tank into the church going, this is not an assault. And then you come right back with, well, if you're not giving your child the drugs they need the chip they need, you might need to take them. I mean, it's not backwards and weird if I don't want a chip in my brain.
Well, I'm talking about non-coercion, there's principally for adults. With children, we always have the question about what the proper balance is between parents' rights and society's right to protect kids from parents. And I think that all of your listeners would find that there are some kids who need to be protected from their parents.
So we see where this is going. Society, Dr. Phil says the state owns the kids.
Well, I don't agree with Dr. Phil.
You know something? I mean, this is unbelievable. You know something? I'm always interested in people by the art, by the fruits, by what they produce. You mind telling us, because on your website, your organization, tell us about your wife's artwork.
My wife has long been interested in the intersection between maternity and domesticity and domestic life. Her mother was a physical anatomist who studied teeth. So my wife's done a lot of art about the human body and in particular about birth.
And for folks that haven't had the pleasure of seeing some of the art, tell us about an average piece.
Well, one of her pieces was that she kept track of every lunch that she prepared for our kids over the course of 2 years. And then she made a series of lunch bags, one series out of lead, one series out of paper, one series out of glycerin soap, and then had these in installations in various galleries lined up or scattered around.
What about the ones with the teeth and the hair and the umbilical cords?
Well, the teeth project, again, is kind of a pay-on to her mother, who studied the evolution of Native American teeth. But in my wife's case, she took casts of our kids' teeth as they fell out over the course of their, 5-year-old to 10-year-old selves, and then cast them into silver and had a series of teeth on the wall cast in silver that showed that evolution of their mouths.
And what's the umbilical cord part?
Well, the umbilical cord, of course, has always been a profoundly spiritual symbol in a lot of different cultures. And so she kept the umbilical. We had our kids at home because we're very critical of obstetric practice. And she kept the umbilical cord.
But you want the state to have poor psychological testing.
Well, I think the state has a role in encouraging public health, subsidizing various kinds.
But you don't trust them to have your children at the facility.
Well, the state didn't have very much to do with that. I mean, we had private health insurance, and the private health insurance would either pay for a midwife to come to our house, or we could go
to
the hospital.
But I'm trying to get this, doctor. See, that's what I mean. You don't trust the government, which I think is pretty reasonable, to have your children at their facility.
The government wasn't offering to come and deliver my kids either at the home or at the hospital. It's a matter of us deciding where to have our kids.
You know what I mean? The government sets the standards and.
Well, I think, I think the government has legitimate reason to say that certain kinds of people can practice medicine and others can't. And it has a legitimate reason to say that you can deliver kids, you can't deliver them in the street, you have to deliver them.
You know, Doc, I think you're talking yourself in circles here.
No, I think I'm trying to make a point that the government has legitimate rights to set certain kinds of regulation for medical practice, and it doesn't have anything to do with whether there's a legitimate right for me to have my kids at home. If the government were to say I couldn't have my kids at home, then I would have to fight that law, but the government allowed me to have my kids at home.
So you see yourself as a, they're phasing that out, though. You see yourself as a pioneer, I would guess.
I think we're all pioneers. This time of history, it's hard not to be a pioneer.
Well, you know, I find you to be an intriguing individual, and I appreciate your honesty with us. I just, out of the gates, I see all these applications being used for the bad, not for the good, and I don't see choice being involved. I see choice being phased out quite rapidly, and I think that, discussions of taking people's children because they won't put them on the drugs that would advance them, I don't buy
proposing that, but it's your hypothetical.
Well, they are taking people's children by the thousands that won't put them on drugs.
I think that we do have we have to have this debate because no matter I don't care how extreme your guest or your listener is, there's some point at which they think a parent.
But who governs who is extreme? Hold on a minute. Who governs who is extreme? You want to have this moral relativist stuff?
I'm not aspersions about your listeners. I'm just saying.
But who sets the parameter of what's extreme, Professor?
All of your listeners have some point at which they think a parent.
Let me ask you a question. Who sets the parameters of what's extreme? The almighty government, who I say is extremely evil.
Well, okay, but that's fine. But if someone's walking down the street gibbering to themselves, I think that we have a responsibility, a compassionate responsibility as a society, to go up to that person and try to figure out how we can keep them from hurting themselves and hurting others.
Well, they're not hurting themselves. I say leave them alone. And okay. I think some of the nuttiest people in the world are running the nut houses.
Okay, that's fine. But what I still think that most of us would agree that we have a social responsibility to have a government to stop crime and to make sure that people who are in severe need have what they need. And I think that what you seem to be really worked up about is this government plan to do mental health screening. And I understand why you're worked up about that. But I think that the question of whether the government has an obligation to figure out how much mental illness there is in our society and what we can do about it, I think that's obvious.
Sir, I have the government documents, and I've had former folks that were, number two Department of Education, where they were in meetings where the plan is to dumb our kids down.
Well,
I
believe very bad things about the Bush administration, but that's not one of the things I believe.
Well, I mean, it's not belief, sir. It's their documents. It's not the Bush administration. It's all of them.
Every institution in our government right now is controlled by the Republican Party. So,
yeah. Well, all right, the doctor has agreed to stay with us into the next hour. Here's the toll free number: 1-800-259-9231. 1-800-259-9231. We're going to go back to the doctor here in just a moment and plug his book. Before we do that, I want every single one of you out there listening to realize that we've got to counter the mass of people that believe the government does no wrong and is loving and good. You need to get 9/11 The Road to Tyranny to find out the truth about 9/11 and expose how it was truly perpetrated. Part two of that, The Masters of Terror Exposed. George Humphrey's great video that I carry, 9/11, The Great Illusion. Eric Hupschmidt's film, 9/11, Painful Deceptions. And Paul Watson's book, 300-plus page, Order Out of Chaos, Elite-Sponsored Terror, and the New World Order. Now, there is a toll-free number to get these films. Got big discounts going on them right now. Just call and ask about the discounts as low as $5.95 per DVD. We got deals where you buy a video, get free books. 1-888-253-3139, 888-253-3139, or you can simply write to me, Alex Jones, at 3001 South Lamar, Suite 100, Austin, Texas, 78704, or, of course, order via the Secure Safe shopping carts at InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. You can watch clips of the films, read about them, look at the different specials there as well. Or PrisonPlanet.tv with our secure online shopping cart. You can go there and sign up, 15 cents a day, to watch any of the films, all the films, read the books online, the special audio reports, all of it, PrisonPlanet.tv, as we fight the construction of the prison planet. Now, going back to Dr. James J. Hughes, who's the executive director of the World Transhumanist Association, Mr. Hughes, again, talking to you during the break, you talk about all this freedom and liberty and doing all of this, and then, you know, I said to you, well, it's not natural for children to be on drugs. You said, well, death isn't natural anymore at 40. You know, it shouldn't be. Well, to make the comparison between something like that and people being forced on drugs en masse is ridiculous. Then that gives the state total control over controlling those drugs and how they're distributed and everybody being an addict. But then on top of that, Professor, we then have the fact that let's say we have an angelic government right now. We're building mechanisms of total tyranny, and tyranny always takes control of those mechanisms. Your comments to that, and tell us about your book.
Well, my book is called Citizen Cyborg, and it reviews in the first third of the book the technologies and how rapidly they're going to come upon us for human enhancement. And then I outline the different political factions that are beginning to shape up on the right and the left, opposed to and in favor of these technologies, and the different arguments that they use about them. And then I propose a series of public policies in the latter part of the book about how to regulate these technologies to ensure that they're safe and universally available and empower people and don't increase the amount of tyranny in our society. So,
if you take a liberal country like Germany, I bet you like their laws. They're saying to women, your 25-year-old computer programmer, you want your unemployment check. You've got to go be a prostitute and serve as 10 men a day because there's no morals anymore and there's no moral compass. And, you know, humans, it used to be natural for a woman to, you know, have love with a man, but love doesn't even exist anymore. That's just some chemical in the brain. And so you go have sex with 10 men a day.
Well, I have seen the argument of why you think that the German social policy would lead that direction.
You didn't hear?
I heard. I'm for the legalization of sex work as they have in Holland because I think that.
And then, well, they were legalized both. So, telling her you don't get your unemployment unless you go take this job.
That only happens when you have coercive workfare policies, as were instituted here in the States, where you tell women who have three kids that they have to go out and find a job and they can't stay home.
Yeah, but Germany's doing it. They're ordering women. Talk about destructive. I don't want to have sex with people I don't know.
Well,
this is dehumanizing. We are human beings.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Guest is Dr. James J. Hughes, head of the World Transhumanist Association. Used to be a Buddhist monk, and he's into this merger with the machines, I guess, at a spiritual level, and maybe the state would have to take children if you don't give them the drugs they need. It's the next level of evolution, and this is the school of thought that's going to dominate things in the years to come. And, well, you won't take the brain chip to have the job? Society shouldn't bend over backwards for you. You'll feel much better once you've got it, once you're with us. But he's honored me by staying on with us into this third hour. We've had him on for the last hour to take your calls coming up here soon. But, Professor, finish up telling us about your lovely book, Citizen Cyborg.
Well, I also want to plug my radio show. People want to listen to all of my weekly public affairs radio show, Change Surfer Radio. They can go to changesurfer.com and listen to all the shows there. My book is Citizen Cyborg, and I also have a blog called cyborgdemocracy.net.
Doesn't sound like much of a democracy talking about forced drugging.
Well, you...
It depends how you define it. It's all nebulous.
Well, you posed a hypothetical about whether employers should have a right to have certain expectations of what their employees are able to do.
Having a chip in their brain, yeah.
Well, and I...
You compared it to breathing oxygen, yeah.
I compared it to reading, and I think that employers do have a right to expect their employees to read, and I don't think very many of us want
to. Hey, you're going
to
win. Don't worry. You got the men in the black ski mask with machine guns backing you up. The nice friendlies.
I wish. It doesn't feel that way.
You know, I told you about Department of Education documents where they said we're going to dumb the people down into unthinking, mindless idiots. And you did agree during the break with me that, yeah, institutions do tend to want to, you know, knock the edges off people.
That's right, and I think that's why we need to give people as much control over their own personalities as possible, because I think most of us would choose
now,
to be...
Now, what you're doing is legitimizing all this, you can enforce it on us.
Well, I think most of us would choose, to the extent that we have control over our own brain chemistry, to be creative, independent, free-thinking individuals.
Have you heard about these viruses they're going to inject people with? They're about to make it law in England that re-engineer the brain?
I haven't heard about that.
I'll tell you about it after the break, but let's take a call, Doctor.
Okay.
Bruce in Kentucky, and then Annette and others. Go ahead, Bruce, you're on the air. After you hear the delay, you'll come over to the telephone.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, sir.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Well, I just think this is all a bad idea. He was on Ritalin. I was on Ritalin years ago. I didn't like it. I'm sure it affects different people different ways, but I didn't feel any less better. I was pretty much a zombie.
You'll feel better with a chip soon. You'll join us in the next level of evolution. You'll
sorry.
Be tied into the Evermind.
Sorry,
the
no.
pain will end. No, we'll be part of the great Zen. There with our brother, Dr. Hughes. Is that right, Dr. Hughes?
Well, I think you're doing a great disservice to all the parents out there who find that their kids actually do better at Ritalin. But some kids don't, and I think that we need to listen to our kids when we give them...
Doctor, when did you come up with all of this when you were deep in
medication? Let me finish my point about medicating kids.
Sure, go ahead.
I have two kids, and I have listened to my kids very carefully. My daughter doesn't seem to like Ritalin, and she's off it now. She didn't find any benefit from it, and she didn't like it, so we took her off it. And I think any parent has that responsibility to listen to their kids. And if their kids are depressed and you try antidepressants and it doesn't work,
but
you
take it off.
But
the state says no. They force kids on it.
But not when you got that case in New Mexico, that gentleman being charged with child abuse for taking his kid off Ritalin because it wasn't doing him any good. What about cases like those?
Well, I think
you don't have much of a choice then there, do you?
Well, that is a case I disagree with, because I think that this should be left up to, for as much as possible, to the decision between a parent and their kid and their doctor. In the case of the harmful effects of not being on Ritalin, I don't think that they're so harmful that the state should step in.
Doctor, stay there. We'll be back soon with your chip. You'll feel better after this break, Doctor.
The appreciate society control grid straitjacket is going into place. The dehumanization is being accelerated. The entire world population is going to be, in an orderly fashion, exterminated by 80 to 95%, according to UN documents. And the small group that's left will be a drugged-out, mindless minion class, literally with their disconnect buttons at the fingertips of the elite. Now, that's what I see being set up. That's what the documents show. That's what the Pentagon says. That's what the Ted Turners and the Prince Phillips are out promoting. And I've really been honored to have Dr. James J. Hughes on the website transhumanism.org for those that are public school educated. Since they started all these great new ideas, we can't read and write or even think. Transhumanism is spelled HUMANISM.org, or link through Infowars.com. And he's the author of Citizen Cyborg. And I want to get into a few issues with him, but I also want to go to Annette and Linda and Bart and George and... My wife hadn't called in to my show in about 4 years, and she called in. She's also my producer, Violet Jones. So we'll see what she has to say. I'm going to be talking to the boss here in a few minutes, folks. So I look forward to this. I told her I was going to tease her and say that, my lovely, intelligent wife. Doc, you were earlier before the break, we were talking about Germany, where they say, okay, there is no right or wrong, so we've legalized prostitution, and now you can't say it's right or wrong. You've got to go service 10 men a day to a 25-year-old woman with a college degree who can't get a job as a software engineer anymore. And then you were making some comments about that?
Well, it's really not a topic that our organization addresses, so it's kind of off topic.
But that just shows what the state is doing.
Yeah.
You know, when there are no morals, when it's all just, you know, nebulous.
Well, I'm much more in sympathy with the kind of social policies that they have in places like Holland and Germany, and one of the attitudes that they have over there is that people should be able to smoke marijuana without going to prison, and that women, that the best way to control prostitution is not to throw women who sell their bodies in prison, but to get them organized in health checkups.
And as soon as they did that, my point is, they then jumped right into, we're taxing it now, and we're the state, and we're now your pimp. And we're going to go grab good-looking young women that have got careers ahead of them. Now, the state controls things, and you're going to have to be our whore.
Prostitution's the oldest profession probably in the human race.
But what about the state telling you you have to do it?
And I think that women should not be thrown in prison for practicing it. I think.
But answer my question, Doc.
Well, I am answering your question. I'm saying I don't think that women should be thrown in prison for practicing prostitution. I think it should be an open profession that we make sure is safe and that women are not infected.
But then if we say it's normal, hold on a second. Then if we say it's normal, and then in this new futuristic world, there are no morals but what the state tells you, then the state says you shouldn't have a problem with destroying your psychology and getting in bed with 10 men a day you don't know.
Well, why does the state have to enforce our morals? Why can't women make a decision for themselves?
They're telling her. The state's saying
there's no
morals.
Why can't women make a decision for themselves about whether it's within
their morality?
They're
telling her she has to.
Well, I told you that the problem with the German policy is that they're coercing women who are on public assistance to leave public assistance to find employment, and then you're saying that this is one of the employments that they can
find. And that's the problem when the state controls everything and has universal psychological testing and all of this.
Well,
they're going to tell us what we've got to do.
What we need to argue about, I think, in that case is whether government should force women on public assistance to leave their families in order to get jobs, and I'm opposed to that. And I was opposed to it when Clinton did it over here, and I'm opposed to it under the Reagan, the Bush administration as well.
Okay. Well, let me, I want to tell you, since you didn't know about it, you've heard of the vaccine that, quote, stops the child's synapses from being able to pick up narcotics and nicotine?
Yeah, I'm opposed to that, too.
Okay, this is a virus, and they're about to make it law in England. We're talking BBC, London Telegraph, Times of London.
I think that kids, I mean, the question of...
Well, let me just finish for those that don't know.
Well, let me just say about that. It's a drug that interferes with kids' ability to uptake certain kinds of drugs. I think the critical question there is, obviously, we think all parents should have a right and an obligation to keep their kids off of drugs. But for parents to permanently change their kids' brains so that they could never experience certain kinds of drugs, I think is far...
Well, then they can't even experience their own endorphins.
Right.
But my point is, the government system that you're saying is so great, give them all this power, look at what they're doing out of the gates.
Well, it doesn't require a government system. That kind of technology is going to be offered to parents over here without any kind of government interference.
And they're insane that they do it. It is a virus that creates plaques in the receptor sites for... pleasure-causing chemicals.
Exactly.
This is insane. When your child scores a touchdown, they won't score a touchdown because they don't want the victory. They're going to be vegetables, and England's about to inject every child with it, and nobody even knows about it.
It's an extremely bad idea, and you know what gave birth to that idea is the war on drugs. The war on drugs is the principal handmaiden of...
You know, this is classic. You're talking about a war on drugs, but then you're saying the state should be able to forcibly put kids on stuff even worse.
Well, what I'm saying is that people should have a right to control their own brain.
But we're not going to under New Freedom.
And what we have,
you're too much of an optimist, Professor.
We have 500,000 people who are in prison in the United States for smoking or selling marijuana, which I consider to be
George Washington smoked. I know. I'm for decriminalization.
All those political prisoners, in my opinion.
I'm for decriminalization, sir.
Absolutely.
But you're not listening to me.
Okay.
Okay. This system you've bought into has been craftily designed to get us in the criminal justice system, the psychiatric system, or the welfare system. It's all designed to get us dependent.
Well, I don't share your worldview, but I do
it's
think
not
that we
my
have,
worldview, sir. It is the facts.
I do think we should have decriminalization of marijuana because I think people have a right to control their own brains.
But see, sir, it's not all moral relativists. There are facts in this world. Water boils at a certain point.
I'm not a moral relativist. I'm not at all a moral relativist.
Okay.
I have a very strict and clear set of morals.
I'll tell you what. My wife, Violet Jones, has called in. I think it's about 4 or 5 years. She's got a person to set you up for this broadcast, and we'll go to Annette and Linda and Bart and George. My dear, you were on with the good professor.
Hi, Alex.
Hi, Violet.
Hi, Dr. Hughes. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I wanted to go over what I think is at the core of transhumanism and of your book and of your opinion. What is your background? Now, this is a secular show, but you have a very spiritually oriented background, and I think your approach to transhumanism is a spiritual approach. So you were once a Buddhist monk,
right?
Okay, and so the reason or how I found out about all of this was on betterhumans.com, which is an interesting website itself. An article by Wesley J. Smith, who we've had on the show before, who wrote The Culture of Death.
A real humanitarian.
He's one of my favorite sparring partners.
Okay. Well, here's a sentence I wanted to read from the article that he wrote about your book. He calls it an epistle for the new religion of transhumanism. And
which I call dehumanization.
Right.
End
basically,
of the species.
I think that the real concern here is that it is a dehumanist kind of belief or thought. But anyhow, I wanted to read this one sentence if I could. It says, moreover, transhumanism is nihilistic at its core, holding that being merely human is wholly inadequate to attaining a truly fulfilled and happy life. For transhumanists, humans aren't smart enough, strong enough, pretty enough, or healthy enough for life to really be worth living. Besides, it's all over so soon. So what do you say to that?
Well, let me just correct you about transhumanism and its relationship to spirituality. We have recently polled our membership, our 3,000 members around the world, about their spiritual beliefs, and we found that although the vast majority of transhumanists are secular of one sort or another, secular humanists or whatever, that we have Christian transhumanists and Hindu transhumanists and Eastern Orthodox and Mormon and all kinds of folks, and I happen to be a Buddhist.
Well, sir, I think your worldview is even more dangerous because of how it kind of, squiggles around issues and call it moral relativism.
Okay. Let me answer your wife's question, because I don't think that there's any necessary relationship between a belief in the afterlife and the conclusion that it's probably a good idea for us to have technologies that allow people to live an extra 50 years, or technologies that wipe out...
or forever with the cybernetic interfaces?
Well, the people should have a right to control their own brains, and if they find it's useful to have a cybernetic interface, that they should have a right to have one.
Of course, it won't even be the original creature.
What Wesley's point is, and what some Christian conservatives have said about transhumanism is that we're some kind of we hate the body and we hate the human condition. There's a grain of truth there. We think it could be radically improved. We think that people will generally enjoy living a second.
Yeah, I don't want how man and the government, the elites, want to improve the body. I see an obsession with death.
I'm getting that impression, Alex. But what I'm saying is,
I understand what you're saying, and yes. I understand your response to that. But you clearly are a person with strong spiritual beliefs because you were once a Buddhist monk.
Right.
So,
still a Buddhist.
I'm still a Buddhist, and I've not had the opportunity to read your book, but basically, this review by Wesley J. Smith, whose opinion I admire greatly in most things and everything that
I've read. My review of his book.
Well, might be.
Oh, were you for euthanasia? I mean,
here's an interesting thing that Wesley J. Smith says, and I was going to try and find it. Has to do with embryos and certain things being unaware or not self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm scrolling on the internet.
Well, let's just ask him, are you here for using all these baby parts?
Well, what Wesley's, one of the concerns that Wesley has about my work...
Here, I have it here.
Go,
can I just
ahead.
Read
yeah.
it real quick? Hughes denigrates human embryos, fetuses, presumably infants who are, after all, not self-aware, and those with profound cognitive disabilities to the status of property or sentient property. This really alarms me. That's kind of like, I forget who this guy, Peter Singer, who says that retarded babies or newborns are worth nothing more than mackerels. And I mean, Alex was just talking earlier on the program about the possible combination of embryonic
chimeras,
neurocells, with machines, unborn children who've never had the chance to live out their destiny being combined with some sort of perfect
machine. And the doctor, can you stay with us just a little bit more, take some more calls?
Absolutely. I want to answer your wife's question.
Call cancer evolution and something good. Everything is good. Everything's just a change, and that there's no such thing as a mutation. Everything that gives rise is natural. You know, all of these arguments, this is dehumanization. This is the Matrix. And I want to go to Annette and Linda and Bart and all these callers for our guests, but going back to my wife, Violet, finish up what you were going to say.
Well, I was just I was reading again in this article while you were on break, and I just was struck again by another sentence, and of course we're talking about Wesley J. Smith, who wrote The Culture of Death, and his review of...
Citizen Cyborg, but...
Right, a Citizen Cyborg. It states how Dr. Hughes, some of your favorite philosophers that you refer to frequently in your book are infanticide proponents Peter Singer and Jonathan Glover. So we're not just talking about embryonic stuff here. We're talking about actual, you know, infanticide. And I'm just really concerned about this whole issue as not only being, you know, nihilistic, but as being, it's an extinctionist thing. I think it's an extension of Peter Singer's animal rights thing, which is extinctionist. And I just, from the things that we've been talking about, I envision a horrible, horrifically possible future where children's brains have been melded with machines and things like in the Matrix where people are plugged in, just their minds driving.
And whatever happened to humanity, the love of humanity, I think life is beautiful and humanity is beautiful. You know, why do this? Why say we're not good? Thank you for calling, my dear. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Violet, I think your concerns are about those kind of scenarios are absolutely legitimate because what we could have is the coercive use of these technologies to restrict people's liberty. And I think that's why we need to have a civil rights movement around people's right to use these technologies in self-chosen ways. But let me address the issue. I am, of course, opposed to infanticide. But the issue is framed between people like Wesley J. Smith and myself. Wesley's an advocate of what I call human racism. He believes that being a human has some kind of meaning and that it is in itself something that needs to be protected from the moment of conception.
Oh, now it's racism to want to stand up for the human species.
Until you start stop speeding. And my argument is that humanness in the first place doesn't really exist. You know, we recently discovered the hobbits of Indonesia, who were about half our height and were genetically similar to us, but wouldn't have been considered human. But if they were tool users and language users and had culture, I think they should have had rights, even if they weren't human.
But the cockroaches can't vote, so you'll vote for them.
And since
the cockroaches outnumber
Alex,
us, then...
Alex, I think the key issue here is whether humanness is a moral category. It's not. It's an irrelevant category.
So now we don't have any God-given rights. The state does.
No, I think what we have to look at is someone the kind of person who has the kind of thinking and the kind of feeling that we have going on inside of our heads.
So the state will decide if you're even a human.
And if they do, then they deserve the protection of human rights.
But only if the state decides. I understand. Only if the state decides. The state's all-powerful.
Well, the state is the only one that protects rights other than we as individuals.
Okay. I think the ones that chew it up, we have to restrict the state. That was the founding fathers. What do they know? Annette in West Virginia. Annette, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Dr. Jones. Hughes, excuse me.
Yes.
Alex, I have a comment for you, but first I would like to address the root of the basis for Dr. Hughes' tendency to believe or to accept the world of artificiality.
And that would be the doctor's demon possession.
As necessary to perfect human beings. Now, coming from a Christian background with a great deal of investigation into the scientific and sanitation rules of the Old Testament, the laws that were given on Mount Sinai to produce a people that would be physically, mentally intelligent, productive, people who thought in terms of the long range, not only of their immediate circumstances, and that would produce a beautiful environment. And witness Solomon's reign.
So what's your question for the doctor?
Well, my question is, were you ever exposed to the scientific laws of the Bible, the Old Testament, there are commandments, statutes, and judgments, and you see, I believe that the Creator gave us a manual, and the manual was to be used.
Well, let me get a comment from him, the doctor.
Yeah, actually, I have a great deal of respect for the Old and New Testaments, and I actually am teaching a religious education course about the Old and New Testaments at the local Unitarian Church. So I think it's very important for my own kids and for all of us to understand the cultural contributions of the Bible. Sure,
Doc. Just a few more callers, and we'll plug your book again. Thanks, Annette. We'll be back. You stay with us.
We're on the.
That's right, the dehumanization slave grid's in place. They're just enforcing it daily. You've got to warn the people so we can escape the pens as quickly as possible and resist the enemy. We'll only have time to take four or five calls. We'll go to Dr. Deagle, then Linda, Bart, George. So that's all the time I have to take. I'm sorry to all the other callers. Real quick, Dr. William Deagle, we've had him on before. He advised Homeland Security, worked in a lot of classified programs, and advised Homeland Security, and he's been in a lot of these meetings. Reported news here that later came out in the mainstream about the Roundup plans, the forced inoculation plans. Dr. Deagle called anyone. He got a comment for Dr. James J. Hughes. Go ahead, Dr. Deagle, who's a medical doctor. Deagle, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks very much. My comment and question would be that it sounds like it's high-minded to be a civil rights advocate for the transhumanist, and that doesn't mean you can't get a hip replacement. But what he's proposing, and I'm going to get down to the nub of this, is civil rights for all living things with all boundaries between species broken. And what it will result in is the creation, as I've seen classified documents, to create cyborg soldiers, to create a caste system within our culture. And I've long
Yeah, it's going to be like India. Look at the fruits of that country. Hell itself.
Right.
And he's a Buddhist, and you know, the cows are walking around. And
exactly. It also is going to create a situation where I know about classified research going on in anti-aging technologies. Some of them are very benign and very
simple. I told you last time you were on, don't get into that stuff that's classified on the
Exactly, show. Yeah. But the thing is that this technology is going to extend human lifespan within the next 5 years by triple or more.
I agree.
Without making new sub-races or super-races, the elite want to make a super-race that basically rules over us for millennia.
They're in love with the Nietzschean beast man.
Right. Doctor, I think you've got an absolutely important point there, and that is that we need to make sure that the human race moves forward together. It won't do for some of us to become...
But you think the state should be able to force drug us.
It won't do for some of us to become super beings.
You're against them having total control, but you want to give them all the tools to do it.
Well, the problem is that people are not going to make, even if they think they're making correct judgments, and I'm going to go back to the quote of the lady earlier that talked about the rules in the Old and New Testament. And the rule in the Old Testament was, you shall not mix the species. And what's going on is, what happens when you make a transhuman mouse that has a human brain in it? What happens when you make a transhuman bear or another animal that it basically thinks, talks, and has a voice box and new neurons that allow them to do things that are human?
Let me set that aside for a question and just ask, do you think that we should all be able to live as long as Methuselah?
I don't see any problem with that at all. I don't think that is the issue. What I'm concerned about is not the issue of whether or not we live long.
It's going to go the bad way, period.
It's going to go bad. I can tell you this from being on the inside. It is already planned, and they've already done research. They succeeded in cloning human beings over 25 years ago. All of the classified research that I've personally seen is so horrendous you can't even imagine it. And unfortunately, it's not available to university professors at the regular secular level because they don't understand.
Doctor,
it will be used for evil. It will not be used for good.
Doctor, let me ask you this. Which do you think is the better way to assure that that bad outcome doesn't happen?
First thing, we have to inform...
Wait, just let me... The two options I see are to ban civilian use of these technologies or to encourage widespread access to these technologies. Which do you think is a better way to go?
I think what we have to do is do something different than either one of those options, which is, number one, we need as a human race make a judgment as a human race to actually listen to the wisdom of the Old Testament, which is, if you create new creatures, you're going to have things like the PERV gene get out of pigs and kill millions. You're going to create new types of catastrophes that are going to cause tremendous cultural and other damage. I mean, look at movies like the Star Wars and the War of the Clones. If we don't think these things are in our future, or thousands of subspecies and superspecies of humanoid beings 1,000 years from now, this is what's going to result, and it will not be pleasant. It will be a result in wars and rumors of wars for millennia between these various different types
of... Dr. Deagle, I want to thank you for your points. Good to hear from you. Well, maybe we can have you two guys on for a debate sometime. Let's talk to Linda in Texas. Linda, go ahead.
Hi. I would like to know where the freedom of choice is for parents when all of our foods are loaded with artificial flavors and colors, which are made out of petrochemicals.
And that's what causes the ADD.
Yes, the petrochemicals, the food additives, which we don't seem to have a choice over because the FDA protects the food industry, is actually drugging our children.
Don't they sell organic vegetables in your local market? They do in mine, and I think it's a wonderful idea. I think all parents...
I'm talking about the majority of Americans. You know, there's a drop in the bucket of...
But there is a shift towards the organic.
I think if people want to eat Cheetos, they probably have a right to eat Cheetos, as long as it's not making people drop dead immediately. But I think it's up to parents to decide what to feed their kids. And I think parents should be educated about the potential health risks of different kinds of foods for their kids. And then we should allow parents to make those decisions.
Why not just have industry take out those petrochemicals that they are, in fact, drugs?
There should be laws against poison in the food.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's not very radical.
I'm fully for the Food and Drug Administration.
There is.
But they don't. They're owned by... It's a revolving door.
Yeah.
I agree. Big corporations have far too much influence over the Food and Drug Administration. We saw that with Vioxx, and we've seen it with all kinds. This is one of the big problems of the Bush administration, is that they take all the corporate lobbyists and lawyers, and they stick them in to be regulators for these industries.
Yeah, but Clinton did that, too. It's both parties. Thanks for the call,
Linda. We don't get good regulation out of that kind of a system.
Two more calls, Doc, and then I'm going to let you go. I appreciate it all the time.
Okay.
Bart in Texas. Bart, go ahead.
What I'd like to say is hell itself has been built on pragmaticism, and much like one of your callers that was a New Ager that called in last week, I really feel the doctor has been blinded by the potential of these technologies and is not understanding.
Yeah, he's caught up in the gray, and he's going to get sucked into the black.
Well, but there is a line between technological advancement and fundamentally altering the human race. You know, the buggy whip argument doesn't fly with me because you're talking about changing the human mind.
Well, the doctor wants to. He thinks it's great.
No, but I know he thinks it's great, but I'm saying the dangers in doing that are unlimited. You know, you can even look at popular culture like movies like Gattaca or Ghost in the Shell, where essentially, you know, in one... The human mind is no longer solid.
Well, I think from this we've gotten the solution. Instead of debates about which Super Bowl commercial is our favorite, we should be having a real debate daily in society about this.
I think science fiction movies are entertainment. They don't really tell us what's going to happen in the future.
The science fiction of 25 years ago is the reality today.
Art imitates life, and life imitates art.
I don't see the giant ants eating Cleveland yet, but I think...
Use whatever example you want.
We need to see
space stations and satellites and offshore drilling, and it was all once science fiction.
I'm a great fan of science fiction. I think we can learn a lot from it. But for every dystopian science fiction novel or movie you can come up with, there was also a positive one.
Well, atom bombs were science fiction, and they're real, and ask the folks at Japan about how great it is.
Yeah, but you're talking about opening up the human mind. I mean, what happens when we are all connected via computers? I mean, you can have any hacker hack into a computer. What's to keep somebody hacking?
We're all connected by computers right now, and we have the problems of...
Well, you know, that whole argument about the government already has all your personal data, so what if they get more?
Yeah, we have...
Well, I mean, that's like saying you've got one leg that's cut off, so let's cut the other off.
We have the problems of spam and personal privacy and computer viruses.
Don't worry, the UN will save us with the tax.
So we're going to enlarge that problem to include our personal minds and thoughts?
So let me ask you, is your solution to the problem to get rid of computers?
No, my solution to the problem is not to create technologies that go beyond all bounds of
okay, well, I'm
control.
Saying,
you know, we have a computer, that's an object outside of myself.
Whatever problems it creates in the future to have the ability to directly communicate with our computers from our brains, those problems will be as manageable as we find today, computer viruses and all the other problems that the computers bring today. There's nothing profoundly different that's going to change, is what I'm saying. We've been creating external devices to help our brains compute since we wrote down the first written language.
Yeah, but not altering the brain itself or hooking it into some government control.
Of course it was. As soon as we wrote down written language, we were saying we don't have to memorize these things anymore. It wiped out the whole profession of storytelling. It wiped out the whole profession.
Yeah, you can't compare writing to having everyone have a chip put in their head by law. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Bard. Last call, George in Illinois. Go ahead, George.
So, Doctor, you're a dangerous man, but I don't think you're a mean man, and I think you're a doctor of politics versus a doctor of science, and I prove it to you.
Okay.
If you would subscribe later as a doctor, they will revoke your license, although thousands and tens of thousands of people in other countries have been cured of cancer. And the quick question I have with you is cancer caused by a virus or by bacteria? What is it?
I'm a sociologist, not a medical doctor, but I do have an opinion about the...
Most are caused by viruses and tissue that's already replicated many times and unable to resist the virus.
It's a deficient disease, and if we would get the right food in our bodies, we could all be healthy people. But because it's a multi-billion dollar industry, they don't want to find the cure.
That's the thing. I don't think the professor knows just how evil the controllers are.
He doesn't know anything, this professor here, unfortunately.
Okay.
I'm a man of 10 children. I wouldn't even go to you, doctor. I really wouldn't.
I'm not a medical doctor, so I wouldn't want you to come to me. But let me just say something about the FDA. I think that the FDA has the right and responsibility, as we just said, to ensure that food and drugs in our society are safe.
But they don't.
The police state.
Sometimes they don't because they've been corrupted by
big corporations. All they want to do is take our vitamins.
And sometimes they don't because they've been corrupted by big corporations, and sometimes their regulatory agencies are overly zealous, and sometimes they're not zealous enough, and I think it's...
How about the aspartame? How about the red food diet? How about the unsaturated oils? How about...
I know, but the answer is not to get rid of the FDA. The answer is for the FDA to do a better job.
No, the FDA is the way of the people because I don't want to be controlled by anybody else. God gave me a brain to think for myself.
I understand that point of view, but I think our situation in this society would be a lot worse off if we didn't have the FDA.
George, you have 20 seconds. Finish up.
Our point is we are God-given entities, and God gave us a brain, and he gave us a free choice. I don't need you to tell me what I should do with my children.
And we're the most powerful thing on this planet, and the elite can't dominate us, so they want to set the trap for us to merge with their devices so they can control us. And the battle cry now, smash the machines, Butlerian Jihad! Listen, I appreciate your call, George, and I want to tell the professor we're going to win, we're going to smash the New World Order, and we're never going to stop. Professor, you are the author of Citizen Cyborg. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Take care. Now, you know the score, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to win this fight. And they are not going to win. We are going to win with God's help. And you know what you're facing. Genetic biometrics, all of it. It's all here. It's all amongst us, and we must defeat them. My humanity just cries out against this. We're God-made creatures, and they hate it. The devil wants to make a counterfeit, wants to destroy God's creation. And your Christian leaders are going to tell you to go along with this. Don't go along with it. All right, let's go to Debbie Morrow, New Millennium Concepts.